In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. St. Paul tells the church in Rome, in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, he tells them, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. I think there are many characteristics and virtues in the Christian life that we all try to struggle and to attain some. However, I think there is one virtue that is growing extinct among us in the world that we live in today and in the society that we live in, and that virtue is self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice. And self-sacrifice is the act of giving up something that you want or have to help someone else. So giving up something I have to help someone else. And this we see exemplified in the Holy Virgin Saint Mary today in her visit to Elizabeth, her cousin. At the time of this visitation, St. Mary had, you know, just heard the Annunciation, so she herself conceived, and she was pregnant. Despite her pregnancy, she didn't say in herself, you know, or despite her pregnancy, she traveled over 100 miles to go and serve Elizabeth, her cousin, who was, of course, an elder. And how old or how far along was Elizabeth with John the Baptist? How much? 6 months, very good. So her cousin was 6 months pregnant. She heard the Annunciation and went to serve her for 3 months for the remainder of her pregnancy. And of course, as we know, as you advance in your pregnancy, things get a little bit more difficult. You can't bend down as you like to. You start having maybe cravings. And so the service of pregnant ladies, for all the men, I'm sure you know, is not maybe an easy one. Some women, of course, are very nice, but I can imagine a person who's 80 years old and who's pregnant. I'm sure the service was very strenuous on her. Despite her herself being pregnant and maybe the things that she's going through, she went to serve. She sacrificed her own self to go serve her cousin. And she didn't do it for a day or for an evening, but she stayed there for 3 months. She spent the night in her home and served her for 3 months. So I think St. Mary, we can learn from her today how she lived a sacrificial life. She lived as a living sacrifice, as St. Paul was talking to us, present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. So so what are we called in our life as Christians? We are called to sacrifice some things in our Christian life. And when I say here sacrifice, it doesn't mean not to have them at all. But sacrifice means, are they going to be in the way of my relationship with God? So when I say things that we're called to sacrifice, I don't mean to have nothing of completely, but that they don't come at the expense of my relationship with God. The first that the Lord speaks about is the relationships. He asked for a sacrifice of relationships. He says in Matthew chapter 10, he says, "Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." This becomes a stumbling block to many people, because how is God coming and saying that he has come to bring a sword and not peace, and he's coming to divide a home, and he's the one that said a house divided against itself can't stand. And he also said the angels witnessed about him, then they said, "Glory to God in the highest, peace on earth." So he's the one that's supposed to bring peace on earth. So how is it that he's bringing a sword? Actually, if we read the verses maybe before this, it kind of brings to light what's going on in this chapter. It says, Christ tells them, before he tells them this word, he tells them a couple of things to show them their value to him. He tells them, do not fear those who kill the body. So he says, don't fear those who kill the body, because fear the person who not only can kill the body, but also has the power to throw into hell, which is, of course, God. So he's telling them to fear God. And he says to them, you are more valuable than a sparrow. He says, aren't two sparrows sold for one copper coin? And then he says, you are of more value than many sparrows. So he's telling the people how valuable we are. If God takes care of the sparrow, and you know, here he says, two sparrows are sold for a copper coin. Typically, it's one to one, because it's the cheapest kind of animal. But here he's saying two sparrows. So there's one that's yani fuq al-ba', or like an extra. So he's saying God is even taking care of the thing that is free, that maybe has no value, but God takes care of it. So he's telling us that you're of more value than many sparrows. So it's here he's expressing his love for us. And then he says, the very hairs of your head are numbered. So each one of our hairs are numbered. Yeah. So God is telling us that we are so valuable in his eyes that each one of my hairs are valuable before the sight of God, and not one of them falls without his permission. Then he follows it up by what we read about him coming to bring peace, not to bring peace on earth, but a sword. And we can look at this as, you know, as an illustration. If you go to a physician and you have something like that looks funny on your hand, and you go to him and say, this looks funny, he says, he looks at it, takes a look at it, he's like, yes, that's a tumor, we need to remove it. So what does he do? He gets the area of where the tumor is, and he'll make an incision around it, and he'll take it out. Do we tell him when he holds the scalpel, what are you doing? You're going to divide my skin. Do we say that? No, because we know that this is going to remove the tumor, the cause of my problems. So actually, when we look at what the Lord is speaking here, he's telling us that peace is only attained when the disease is removed. And the disease here is sin, the sin in my life. So I can only really have peace with him if he brings a sword. So actually it's required that he bring a sword and divide the things that are keeping me from him. And he said that sometimes even our family relationships could be this factor that's dividing me between or keeping me from him, even if it's our family members. So he said nothing should come between him are between us and God. He wants this relationship to be the most superior relationship. So he's asking us here to remove the relationships that don't edify or foster unity with Christ. So if we think about our relationships that we have and question, do they edify Christ or do they edify my relationship with him? If not, we should reconsider. We should seek friends that edify. As you go around moving from your work to your school to church life, seek those friends that can edify your spirit, that can help build you up and lift you up. You yourself be a friend that can edify. If I myself am not a friend that can edify somebody else, then I'm not a good friend. So we need to search in ourselves, am I a good friend to my neighbor? Am I somebody that can help somebody grow in their spiritual life? Or do I make fun of them, talk behind their back, set bad examples, maybe be a negative influence? Who am I to my friends? And lastly, to disengage friends that don't edify. This might become, you know, it's a little difficult, but it's a necessary step. St. Paul tells us that bad company corrupts good morals. So if I don't disengage those relationships that bring me down, I can never, you know, be elevate my spiritual life. If you look at the people that were not born in the Christian faith and that have converted to Christianity, they often sacrifice many relationships. As we know, you know, those who convert from maybe Islam to Christianity, the sacrifice that they have to make is very great. Some of them have to sacrifice their families, their parents, their brothers, their sisters, and not even sacrifice speaking with them, but even to be threatened by them. But this is something to them, their relationship with Christ is more important than their family. So how is it that sometimes when we are called maybe to fast, to pray, we kind of get embarrassed maybe between among our friends? We can't even accept, you know, a word of ridicule for the sake of my faith, and we have people that are being threatened and are no longer speaking to their parents because of their faith. And it really puts us to shame. Another thing that Christ, or that we are called to sacrifice, is our possessions. And this, I think, we've heard a lot about. The Lord says in Luke 12, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things that he possesses." So he says, my life is not valued by how much I accumulate here on earth. And notice here he says, take heed and beware. So he's warning us from the get-go that the possessions will be something that will tempt us and something that may be a hindrance between my relationship with him. He warns us up front. He also says in Matthew 6, do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So he says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. So the heart will follow what? The treasure. So the treasure here is something that we can, it's not like I have a tendency towards treasures. It's not like because of my heart, I desire the treasures. No, it's actually we see the treasures, we lust after the treasures, and then our heart will follow it. So we have to train ourselves, and we'll mention how, we'll have to train ourselves to not search after the treasures, but search after the thing that doesn't corrupt or is destroyed, which is our heavenly, you know, palace. And then he also says in Matthew 16, for what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man gain in exchange for his soul? So what is it that's more valuable to you than your own soul? Is there something more valuable? Unfortunately, very sadly, people put their work before even partaking of the body and blood of Christ. They put their work, they put their friends or their own relaxation of the flesh more than their own soul. So God is challenging us here in this question. What is it that is of more value in your life than your soul? Can there be anything more valuable than your soul? Because mind you, this is what's going to live for eternity, whether it will be in the resurrection of life or the resurrection of death. Either way, there will be a resurrection. Your soul will live forever, or your spirit will live forever. So the first we said was relationships. The second we said was possessions. The third sacrifice that we're called to live as Christians is the sacrifice of the self. And this, I think, is, you know, the heart of the matter, the sacrificing myself. And I like to mention two things about sacrificing the self. The first is giving preference to others. St. Paul says to the Philippians, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each esteem others better than himself. Esteem here is like honor, not just put them before. مش يعني عزومة مركبية as they say, where because I feel embarrassed, I will do something. لأ, but esteem, honor others more or better than yourselves. And also he says in Romans 12, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another. Giving preference to one another. Let them go first. Let them take of me first. If we look, this is a common problem among children. Children, they have a problem, you know, sharing. All children, we have to work with them. You're playing with this and your brother wants it. Let him play with it. Let's share. We try to teach our children to share. And you say, yes, Abuna, as an adult, I have no problem sharing. It's no problem. I can give them, you know, my phone to for whatever, or I can let them use it. It's no problem. But what about our time? What about our time? Do I have a problem when my wife comes and asks of me something, or my husband comes and asks of me something while I'm in the middle of doing something, or while I'm merely of watching a game, or while I'm in the middle of maybe doing something, you know, for myself, putting on makeup or arranging something? Do I have a problem with my time and say that this is my time? Don't bother me during this time. Do we have a problem with this? This sounds very similar to the child, the selfish child who doesn't want to share their toy. Not only giving preference to others and self-sacrifice, but also being spent for others. Being spent physically for others. Maybe when I come home from work, I'm tired, I don't want to spend any time with my, or I'm tired, I can't spend really much quality time with my children. And I say, I'm going to go take a nap. And you go take a nap and leave your children for maybe an hour or so while you take a nap. And by the time you wake up, it's time to begin the nighttime routine for your children, to get them, you know, finish their studies and to get them to bed. How much quality time did we spend with them? Maybe if I replace this hour of my traditional nap and I spent it with my children and then said, okay, I'm going to lose 1 hour of sleep today for my children's sake. This is self-sacrifice. This is self-sacrifice. St. Paul says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, by the mercies of God, like he's begging us, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. He doesn't say present your spirits, present your soul, present your mind, but what does he say? Present your bodies a living sacrifice. God gave us this body and maybe our health to be able to serve others. And also he says about himself to the Corinthians. Now the Corinthians were people that, you know, kind of, St. Paul founded their church and they were kind of doubting his apostleship. And he would serve them and not take one penny from them, but he would take it from the churches in Macedonia. So he would take from other churches, maybe his needs. He would use his hands to make tents, to make money so he can spend it on the church. All this so he doesn't burden the church in Corinth. And then what does he say to them? He says, I will very gladly spend here is his money, and be spent for your souls. What's be spent? This is his own body. His own body. I would be spent for what? For your souls. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. This always, you know, baffled me about St. Paul. The more I love, the less I am loved. What kind of relationship is this? This is very difficult to do. To serve physically and, you know, wholeheartedly, even when I don't get love in return or when there's no appreciation. But yet I serve. I sacrifice my body for the service of others. Even when you look at the Synaxarium for today about Haggai, he rebuked the people. Why? Because they left building the house of God to what? To go build their own homes. They suffered from the me complex, the me, me, me. I go first. I want this. I want that. The selfish complex, which I think is very prevalent among us. Many of us, we think about first ourselves and our comfort, and second, everybody else. Even our children, believe it or not. We say that we love them, but really they come after the self sometimes. The last thing that we are asked to sacrifice is even our own rights. Sometimes we're asked to sacrifice our rights. I'm not saying here to be a pushover, that not to stand up for your rights or to, you know, to ask, you know, for something that you are entitled to. No. But here I'm speaking about when my right to do something maybe is a stumbling block for somebody else or can hurt somebody else. St. Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, spoke about a couple of many things, but one of them, he spoke about offering or eating meat offered to idols. So in Christianity, we look at the meat that's maybe offered to idols, and we look at it as just a meal. I don't believe in any of this, the idols and their faults anyways, so it doesn't bother me whether I eat it or I don't eat it. But St. Paul said, you know, if this eating this meat causes my brother to stumble, I would rather not eat meat at all. Why? Lest I make my brother stumble. And this is the key. Was St. Paul's freedom, or he's saying that I'm not going to let my freedom be a stumbling block for my brother. Oftentimes we say, Abuna, I can, you know, have one glass of wine in a gathering and it not be a problem. That's fine. It can be. Yeah, you may not have a problem. But maybe the youth who's just turning 21 next week might look at that as a license to drink and might be a stumbling block for them. So do we consider others and maybe the freedoms that we might have and enjoy? Do we consider that I might be a stumbling block? And you look at St. Paul himself. He says in 1 Corinthians 9, he says, do we not have no right to take along a believing wife, as also the other apostles, the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Cephas here is St. Peter. So he's saying, don't we have a right as servants of God to be married? So my wife can help me in the ministry, can help, you know, the things of the house, can take care of these things for me while I serve. Do we not have this right? Most certainly, we have the right. But then what does he say? Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. So he sacrificed even this right that he had to take along a believing wife so he can preach the gospel of Christ, so he can devote all of his time to ministering of the word. So he sacrificed. So how do we live this sacrificial life? So we spoke about four things, about sacrificing relationships, about possessions, about the self, and lastly about even sacrificing some of our rights. So how do we live the sacrificial life? I came up with three things, the three P's, to make it easy for us to, you know, to memorize. The first is practice. Practice. Practice sacrificing. Practice giving up something you want or have for somebody else, to help somebody else. And mind you, sacrifice by definition means that I don't get it. So if I have, you know, $20 and I'm going out with my friend and he doesn't have anything, and we say, okay, we'll split it. I'll give you 10 and I'll take 10. This isn't much of a sacrifice because you're still going to have a meal. But maybe if I give him 15 and all I can get is a sandwich without a drink and I'm not able to get the drink, then that's maybe a sacrifice because I didn't get something that I wanted. So sacrifice is not getting something that I wanted for the sake of giving it to somebody else. But giving in our abundance, it's not really a sacrifice. It's maybe an offering at this point. And that's why the Lord praised the lady that gave the two mites, because it was a sacrificial offering. It wasn't an offering of abundance. And that's why he said that she gave more than all those that put in the money box, because she gave out of her poverty, and this was something she could have eaten with, and she sacrificed her food for it. This is sacrifice. So we need to practice. And this can start at home. You know, I have something, a task that I want to do. Let me come and tell my husband or wife, let's, you know, go do something together. And you go and do, you know, have a nice evening with your spouse or your children. And then you come home and whatever task that you needed to do, after they go to sleep, maybe you stay up and you do them. You sacrifice of yourself, you're spending and being spent for others. So practice. The second is patience. Patience. And the third is perseverance. So what's the difference between patience and perseverance? Patience is kind of like just tolerating a delay, you know, a delay in time. And sometimes God asks us to wait. To wait. Let time pass. Be patient. And this is something that's difficult in our time because we're used to instantaneous satisfaction and instantaneous response. We want to search something, we Google it. We want to eat something, we go through a drive-thru. We get it immediately. So we're used to getting things immediately. But sometimes God is asking us to be patient. He asks us to be patient. And being patient, He's asking us what? To give up control. To give up control. Give up control over when and where we live. When and where I get something that I want. So when I have this patience, it will help build in me this ability to sacrifice for others. Because I'm used to waiting. It's okay. Waiting is no big deal. The new Mish'arif A came out, the iPhone or iPad or whatever. It's okay. I don't need it the same day that it's out. I don't need to stand in line and spend the night outside, you know, just to have this item. What's the big deal? I can wait another month when it's readily accessible. It baffles me, the people that spend the night, like from like, I think some this year was like a record for Black Friday. They spent the night from like Sunday. The day, so they spent the night 4 days to save what? I think $100 or $200 even. I think if they worked at McDonald's for those 4 days, they would make up more than they saved. The last is perseverance. So what's the difference between patience and perseverance? Perseverance, yani, has something to do with a difficulty or something that you're enduring, a particular like suffering. So there's some kind of struggle. Maybe patience is the passage of time, but perseverance is you're enduring something, you know, maybe for a particular period of time. So there's a struggle. And this, you know, teaching us to struggle in our prayer life. You know, sometimes we often hear, Abuna, I'm too tired to stand up and pray. Abuna, I can't do it. I can't focus. I can't do this. I can't do that. So we just kind of, after, you know, a week or so, we just give up and we don't do it. And we say the Lord's Prayer quickly before we sleep and we, you know, tuck ourselves in and go to sleep. But even in our prayer life, in our reading the Bible, despite us understanding it, we need to struggle. It needs to be a struggle. And the services that we might do, there needs to be this perseverance, this endurance. And I think there's a nice example of this in the Old Testament. David, after he committed the sin with Uriah's wife and she was pregnant, the sentence was that this child would die. So David said to himself, I'm going to fast and pray for 7 days. Or he's going to fast and pray. So he fasted and prayed, you know, and, you know, wouldn't eat, wouldn't do anything for 7 days. And after he did this for 7 days, the child died. So what he was praying for, you know, he didn't know that it was going to be 7 days, but he was just going to do this until God answered his prayer. But God responded, but he took the life of this child. What is the response of David? Or maybe we can ask ourselves, what is our response in this situation? Would we persevere in my prayer, in my fasting, or in my spiritual life? Or would I say, this is hopeless. I don't know why I even pray to God if he doesn't answer my prayers. I'm not even going to go to church anymore. How could God do this to me? This might be our response. But what does David do? He says, and this is in 2 Samuel 12. So David arose from the ground, washed and anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and he went into the house of God and worshiped. All of these things are not, you know, the typical response of somebody who is, you know, mourning. What does he do? He arose, he anointed himself, he changed his clothes, he went to the house of God and he worshiped. This is the day that his son passed away. And this is what he was praying for. And then what happens? He says, then he went to his own house, and when he requested, they set food before him and he ate. So now he's eating, as if everything's back to normal. Put on normal clothes, he's eating, everything's back to normal. Then his servants didn't understand what is going on in this guy's mind. And he said, then a servant said to him, what is this that you have done? You fasted and wept for the child while he was alive. But when the child died, you arose and ate food. And he said to them, while the child was alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether the Lord will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. This is the point. Despite this difficulty and this hardship, he still returned to God and he prayed. And the last part of this verse is the key. And this is something, you know, it gave me goosebumps when I read it. He says, I shall go to him, but he shall not come to me. He leaves us here with hope. He has the hope of the resurrection. He says, yes, he left this world, but I have hope that I will go to him. I will see him. And this, when you read the Psalms that David composed, we have the same thing. He describes everything upon him. The thousands are against me. The armies are against me. But then he says, but I hope in the Lord. Despite the hardships and difficulties, he still turned to God. So he persevered in his prayer life, in his relationship with God, in his attendance and coming to worship. He persevered. So if you want to learn, like St. Mary, to live a sacrificial life, we need to do three things. We need to practice sacrificing my possessions and maybe my time for others. We need to be patient and wait for the Lord. And lastly, we need to persevere in our spiritual life. May God grant us the ability to live this sacrificial life as St. Mary did, and to learn from her, not this virtue, but many more, for the glory of his holy name. And glory be to God forever. Amen.